Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, January 25th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Kelly.
Also with you today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, although I'm a little disappointed you weren't as dramatically entering the podcast as Brian was.
Said a high bar or low bar, one of the two.
Yeah, we'll debate that in a different show. But yeah, so unfortunately, I think the Easterman judge is going to give you a half point deduction for that, Andrew. Sorry.
Oh.
So, and I just realized Andrew has no idea what that reference even means.
He probably has no idea.
Hello and welcome to Friday, everybody. He's like, what do you mean East Germany? All right, so we're going to talk today about a couple of different topics. The first is Microsoft, believe it or not, because Microsoft has released Microsoft Office for the Mac in the Mac App Store. Right, Andrew?
Yes. And there was some questioning going on with some people. Dave mentioned one. I saw a commenter on our Facebook post that says they raised the prices. Now, I did reach out to
Microsoft. The price was higher. It was higher in the Mac store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did reach out to Microsoft, and they said their pricing was consistent between the Mac App Store and the Microsoft Store.
Okay.
But apparently there's a specific reason why.
And that is?
They just raised the price of the subscription on both ends.
Okay. So what happened was people were remembering it was a certain price, and then when it came out on the App Store for a little bit more, it actually was getting updated everywhere to that new improved pricing, we'll call it. The higher number.
Yeah. I noticed. Now, I haven't downloaded any of the apps to see, to try and sign up and see what it is inside the app. But in the App Store page, there are three plans: a personal, home, and business plan. And I think the personal is the cheapest. That might have been around $70.
Okay.
Whereas the home plan is $100.
Okay. So what is there a significant difference between the two? Because that's the part I didn't remember, was I never been able to keep track of what version, what their versioning does for you.
Well, see, I mean, not only that, I'm not sure. It probably depends on, like, how many devices you can add to it, maybe, because I think that's what usually happens with that type of plan.
Yeah.
But I also don't know what the price of home was before.
Okay. So that's probably...
I don't remember either.
Yeah, I know they had some different pricing levels, also depending on what you wanted. Like, you had to buy, like, the entry level one doesn't come with Outlook, I think. And then, I think there was a secondary one.
It seems like we should have to pay more for that particular privilege. maybe that's just me.
That it should hurt you to have to, yeah, to so be able to use Outlook.
Okay, like, yeah, you're gonna have to. We're gonna pay you anyway. Yep, please go ahead.
Well, I do remember. I want to say that there was like a step up from the personal use or whatever they were calling it plan that did not include Outlook, because you were gonna use whatever other plan you wanted.
Okay, so I'm on the website.
Okay.
So the personal plan, which is the cheapest, that's $70 a year. Mm-hmm. What you get with that is Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Publisher, Access, and then OneDrive and Skype.
Now, Publisher and Access are still PC only. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And then with the home plan, it's the same thing, except for up to 6 users. The personal plan is only for 1 user.
1 user, okay. Okay, and then I assume these also come with some additional features, like I think OneNote had some extra stuff if you were an Office subscriber, and you probably get some sort of Skype upgrade or something, if I'm remembering correctly.
60 minutes per month per user.
Okay, and that's of plans, Skype out service, where you can just dial any phone number and use Skype like it's a phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And then for both plans, you also get a 1 terabyte of OneDrive storage.
Okay. And this is a price per year. And then it's a little bit more if you want to buy if you wanted it monthly, because I think it was $10 a month for the home, and then
$7 for personal.
Yeah. Okay. And then there is also the one-time purchase, which is $150 for home and student, which is Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, and that's it. And it's the old school. I bought a license. I'm going to use this license until the end of time because I'm never going to upgrade my computer either, sort of thing.
Yeah. So. And it's also notable that the home plan lets you try it free for a month, but mm-hmm. the personal plan does not.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder why that would be, actually. I guess because with the personal one, I don't know. It seems like the same set of applications. So
yeah.
I wonder why one user doesn't get a demo. Anyway. One of the other things about these that I remember being a big deal, probably the last time that Microsoft Office got a lot of discussion in the Apple world, is because they also offer iOS versions of Word, Excel, and I think PowerPoint. And they do have there is a mobile mail app. It was someone else's app, and then Microsoft bought it and made it their own. So there are iOS versions of these. So if you are somebody who lives in the Microsoft Office world, you do have the opportunity to go mobile, because Word and Excel, and I want to say PowerPoint, but I know Word and Excel are available. So you can take your iPad with you and still do things with some of these documents if you so desire. So that's one thing that I do remember about using those that was kind of interesting. And it's not a terrible experience. Like, I've done it a couple of times sort of out of necessity, and it's not terrible. I can put that out there.
And I just looked that up, too, and PowerPoint is available on iOS.
Okay. PowerPoint I never had a reason to use, but I've had the occasional need for Word or Excel. And it was on an iPad. I haven't done it on a phone. And even if I did, I don't have a big phone. So, a great big phone, so I wouldn't... I assume the experience is different, but it is a decent enough experience that if you needed to do something and did not have your computer with you, you would still be able to accomplish whatever that was. So it's pretty, it's pretty nice to have that sort of as a backup to be able to do that kind of stuff. So that's pretty good. And a terabyte of space is a lot of space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't even get that from Google with anything, to pay. You have to pay for that with Dropbox. You have to pay for that with iCloud storage. I'm sure you're paying more for it if it's iCloud storage. So, Brian, what do you think?
I think Apple replaced the 1 terabyte option and just added 2 terabytes now, if I remember right.
Okay. That would
what
be good.
Are you asking me?
Are you much of an Office user? Have you used these? Do you look forward to being able to manage these through the App Store?
Yes, in part because I tend to make my App Store purchases with discounted iTunes cards whenever possible, and that does I am obsessive enough about it that tends to be that whenever possible tends to be all the times. I use Word mainly for editing fiction and editing other mm-hmm. Authors' fiction, and then of course the work I've done with Bob on For Dummies books mm-hmm. Is also, you know, the publishing world works on
Office.
On Office, yeah.
Okay.
Period. Like end of story.
So for you, this isn't really $100 a year, because when you add the gift card, it ends up being. Like $80 a year, $85 a year.
$80 or $85, one of the two.
Okay.
Right. 20% discounts have become rarer.
Not impossible to find.
Correct. Not impossible to find, but much rarer.
Yes.
But 15% usually is not. Like 2 years ago, 2 and 3 years ago, there was like any given time you could find some discounted iTunes cards.
Yes.
And either Apple clamped down or something changed in the monetary value, the economic model of how those cards are working for the retailers. But they are less common now. I did see a 20% discount right before Christmas. Actually, I bought like $200 cards in the lead up to Christmas for $80 each, and that was pretty cool. So anyway, yeah, I will move my subscription to the App Store for that reason.
Excellent.
Unless I'm grandfathered in.
Mm-hmm. Which is possible. So we haven't seen much about that yet. And so I do want to point out that when Andrew's talking about the price changing, what he's talking about is Microsoft PR explained to Andrew, told him it, you know, as in person, basically, that this is what was happening. Like, I don't want this, you know, like I heard from a friend who knows a guy, like that's not how any of this worked. Like, this was Microsoft coming out and saying the price has changed and that new pricing is what's reflected in the App Store.
And yeah, I think that direct with Andrew. With Andrew, they simply said the pricing was consistent. It turned out that it's consistent because it changed.
That's true. I was getting my timeline backwards on that. So the thing to me that's notable about this is that I know a lot of people who like to just manage their subscription through the App Store. Some people do it for convenience. I know it's all in one place. I know it just comes out of my iTunes account. I have whatever system I have to work that out. Some people have a system like Brian's where it gets loaded up with discounted cards so that $100 a year subscription is really $80 or $85 instead. And I also know that it's also nicer to have that in one place instead of to have all different charges hitting your credit card from all different places. So that makes it easier to manage as well. So I'm glad that they're doing this because it just makes it easier for people who have a need for Microsoft Office. Like, this is just another avenue that makes it possible for people to do this in a convenient way. So honestly, I'm surprised it took this long because I remember when it came to the App Store, to the iOS App Store, to the iTunes App Store for iOS devices, that people sort of went, okay, now when can I do this on the Mac? And it's been years since that happened. So I'm honestly surprised it took this long, but I'm glad it's there now.
Yeah.
So that should be, I think that'll be good for, it'll just be good for everybody. And it's just kind of, I think it will be interesting to see if anything else changes with the apps themselves. Cause I know at some points, there's been some nicer features in the Mac version than in the Windows version. So I would be interested to see how the, programs continue to evolve. Not just, now that they're in the App Store and lots more people have access to them.
Yeah. And I think it's nice that you can buy these 365 subscription directly in those Mac apps and maybe on the iOS apps too. I'm not sure. But, you know, we had Netflix recently. They made it so that you can't purchase a Netflix subscription in their app anymore.
Yeah, they yanked
that. Now, even though Microsoft did raise the price, you can still buy it inside the app. Whereas with Netflix, they raise the price and remove that ability.
And you can't.
So,
yeah. It's more expensive and more complicated. Thanks. Mm-hmm. It's really nice that they are trying to do this as kind of low friction as possible. I think it's good that people get that opportunity. So
yeah,
that'll be a good thing. One of the other things I want to talk to all of you about today is ExpressVPN. They are our sponsor for today of Daily Observations. And here's the thing is, as you know, specifically with Andrew and I on the show, we talk a lot about online security breaches, and it's hard not to worry about where your data is going. And then especially because if you listen to Andrew and I tell you about all of this stuff, it sort of sounds like everyone everywhere is always out to get you. Right. And so you don't want to put your information at risk. And there are very easy ways to make sure that you are keeping your data secure and keeping it your own. And the easiest way to do that is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN has easy to use, easy to install apps, and they run seamlessly in the background. They run on your phone, they run on your computer, they'll run on your iPad, and it's a single click, turn it on, turn it off. And that way, if you're out and about, you don't have to worry about your information getting out to people who should not have it. It's secure and it anonymizes your internet browsing. It masks your public IP address, and all of your data is encrypted when it's traveling across the VPN. It's less than $7 a month, and it's the number one rated service by TechRadar, and ExpressVPN comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're ever maybe in a long line somewhere with public Wi-Fi and you want to just hop on the Wi-Fi and maybe check your email or do something, it's very, very easy to make sure that you have ExpressVPN running first so that if there is someone who's trying to get at the data of people on that public Wi-Fi network, they can't do it. It's a piece of cake. So what you need to do is go over to expressvpn.com/TDO, and that's expressvpn.com/TDO, and head over there and you will get 3 months free with a 1 year package. And you should go check that out today. Learn more and keep your data safe. So our other topic today is what I have dubbed the privacy cage match, because it sounds like we're sort of headed for a tech company Thunderdome style competition when it comes to privacy. Right, Brian?
Yeah. So like we've got these tech behemoths, you know, these companies that are like more profitable and larger than any company in history has ever been, perhaps at least going back to the East India Company. That's mm-hmm. another story, another economy, and another podcast for sure. And we have two behemoths, Facebook and Google, who profit mostly by selling access to our data, selling access to us, mm-hmm. by pilfering and plundering our digital lives, and it, you know, as much as our lives that they can get a hold of, so that they can match us up to advertisers. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Apple, a company that has been trading on privacy, certainly since Tim Cook passed, took over from the late Steve Jobs, and possibly even before that. But I think really, I think this kind of came more of an issue during the iPhone era. But whatever, that's also another story. And we have Tim Cook calling privacy a human right. Mm-hmm. He did that. Was that last year? Wasn't that, Andrew? Did you cover that?
Yeah, sometime last year, I think, is when we first heard that from him.
Apple's been touting privacy and talking about the importance of privacy and talking about how privacy is going to become more and more of a competitive factor, and that privacy is important. And then he came right out and called privacy a human right, like I said, last year.
And one of the things that Apple has been doing is talking about the security of the data that you give your phone or the Messages app or different things. When they talk about new features that are coming to iOS or to macOS, one of the features that they talk about is not just how this makes your life better or how this makes your life easier, but how that data is secured or how Apple is making sure that nobody else can get to it aside from you. And that's been just sort of one of the talking points when they talk about whatever the new things are that are coming for the last couple of versions now. So it's something that we've been seeing from Apple pretty regularly for a while.
Yeah, it has. And now we've got Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella. That was at Davos, right?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Andrew did a little mention on that for us today. He said he was channeling Tim Cook, and he said that privacy is a human right, or should be human right. Which was it, Andrew?
He's saying privacy should be a human right.
Should be a human right. And it's interesting to me from the standpoint of, now we've got two companies saying this, and then a bunch of other companies that are predicated on exactly the opposite of that.
Yes.
And that makes for an interesting cage match for sure. And then the whole time we've got Apple spending diddly squat. What did Apple spend on lobbying? $6.6 million?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And I mean, like, what, come on, man. What is that? You want privacy to be human right? All right. Spend some lobbying money.
And that's half what Facebook spent, by the way, for people who may be playing along at home. Facebook spent $12.6 million
last year. In the grand scheme of 2019, $6.6 million is roughly a big bunch of nothing. So yeah,
that's less than a rounding error when it comes to Apple, Apple's finances.
You know, Apple has long been, especially under Steve Jobs, Apple was pretty averse to lobbying. Mm-hmm. Apple's been less averse to lobbying, but that's only because Steve Jobs set such a low bar since his passing. And but it's interesting. I mean, privacy is not a human right. We've also got China, of course, making, you know, privacy a state mandated not right.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, authoritarian regimes all over the world are attacking privacy. I noticed yesterday that the rights punching boy, George Soros, mm-hmm. Who is, you know, out there promoting democracy and freedom with his many billions of dollars, gave a big speech yesterday where he directly labeled China an enemy of democracy as a whole, on the whole. So, you know, it's and then this is obviously a very deep topic, but the even broader backdrop is that most Americans, at least, don't care. They don't care about the privacy. Give me free stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, yay, I'm going to spend 4 hours on Facebook.
Well, and
I'm
I think a portion of that is, I think there's some not caring, but I think there's also some not understanding. You know, like people have talked about Facebook's friend of a friend feature. So talking about, like, you know, And people go, oh, so a friend of a friend can see a post, like, big deal. But then you have to stop and think about it and go, well, yeah, if I post this and then, you know, and someone I know can see it, then someone else who I really wish couldn't see it because they're also friends with my friend would also be able to see it. And mm-hmm. you have to make an adjustment in order to keep that from happening. And, you know, and I think sometimes that doesn't get thought through until you come up with an object example. Like, if you post something and your stepkids can see it, well, guess what? The ex can probably see it too, because the stepkids friends with both their parents on the book face, and here we are. So, like, that's a really common example. I've had like three different conversations with people where I had to explain that's exactly how it works. So I think part of it is not understanding. And then the other part of it is, you know, it's free or inertia. Like, everybody's on Facebook. So, you know, if I leave, I can't talk to anybody anymore, because nobody remembers that their pocket computers came with an app called phone. So I think there's a certain amount of that as well that just sort of happens. You know, people are sort of not caring. But I think sometimes if you put it in some pretty stark terms, sometimes people will pay a little bit more attention.
Yeah, maybe.
That's my hope.
Maybe, hopefully. So, I mean, you know, Andrew, you wrote that you know, Satya Nadella may be talking a good game here on terms of privacy, but that Windows 10's privacy policy is very specifically not privacy friendly.
Yeah. But I mean, despite how snarky that headline was, and despite what's going on with Windows 10, I do still think it's still good and important that Satya is being more outspoken about privacy.
Absolutely.
It is. Yeah. Anyone talking about privacy is a good thing at this point. But the reality is that privacy is not considered a human right in any way.
Correct.
Shape or form.
But one of the things, like, we've all gotten these emails. This is sort of what gives me hope about Microsoft. And if anybody thought 2019 wasn't going to be weird, here we are talking about Apple and Microsoft being on the same side when it comes to privacy.
Well, because neither one of them makes their money from exploiting our privacy.
Precisely. Yeah.
I mean,
but
it's really, I mean, the cynical view is that it's really easy for these companies to say that. Because that's not where they make their money. The less cynical view, especially for Apple,
well, I don't think it's cynical to say that at all. It's just the truth. That's not where their money comes from.
Well, it's right, but the less cynical view is that Apple deliberately predicated its business model on not exploiting our privacy.
Yes.
Right. And I mean, for Microsoft, it's probably more like they stumbled into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't really think that was ever an issue, but I think that Tim Cook has been building Apple's ecosystem, Apple's platforms, Apple's devices mm-hmm. around privacy being a central point from the get-go.
And that's one of the things that we've talked about, you know, inadvertently in that we've discussed how it took so long for everything to be HomeKit compatible. And what has come out since HomeKit certification came out is, yeah, it took forever because we had to get the privacy right. We had to get the security right and make sure that these were things that weren't going to be super easy to hack or super easy to access if you weren't a person who was supposed to have access to it. So the privacy and security stuff is, we know, is important to Apple. And I'm glad that it's starting to get important to Microsoft as well. And one of the things about that that gives me hope is that every once in a while in my inbox, I get, we've updated our privacy policy. And so that means it could change. Like, I'm sure the Windows license agreement has a similar sort of, you know, we also reserve the right to update this policy at any time. And so maybe yeah, so there will
Apple's.
Be. Right. So maybe, but we know that Microsoft's currently is not great, and it would be nice if that were improved. And it sounds like they're thinking about it. And now that it's a conversation that's happening, you know, obviously at slightly higher levels of Microsoft, then maybe it's a thing that can get changed and can get updated. And that would be awesome. And I would really like to see that. But like I said, it's just very weird to see Apple and Microsoft on the same side of something. Because, yeah, so for anybody who thought 2019 wasn't going to be weird, I stand by my assessment. It's going to be weird. And this is one sign why that's the case. So I want to thank both of you for being here today. Thanks so much for joining me, Brian.
Indeed. Thanks for having us.
And that was a good time. And Andrew, thanks for coming by today to talk about Office.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We've got a whole lot of Microsoft on the show today. It'll be interesting to see. If you would like to hear more about these things, if you want to weigh in on privacy issues, you can get a hold of us at observations@macobserver.com. You can leave comments in the show notes, and you can find us on Twitter at TMO Daily. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I have enjoyed talking to all of you this week. I will talk to all of you again on Monday. And until then, be excellent to each other.